Good morning and welcome to our Q3 2015 IMS call. I'm joined here today by Jackie Notes, MD of Mature Savings, Kerrigan Proctor, MD of LGR, Paul Stanworth, MD of Energy Capital, Duncan Finch, MD of Insurance, Mike Berry, MD of Digital Savings, and last but certainly not least, sitting right next to me, Mark Zinkler, CEO of LGIM. Today's strong numbers show we are growing our business stock. LGIM assets and annuity assets are up, and because of this, we delivered record cash generation at the three-quarter year point. The top-line numbers are operational cash up 11% to £936 million, net cash up 14% to £943 million, LGIM assets under management up 8% to £717 billion, annuity assets also up 8% to £43.1 billion, savings assets up 2% to £104.9 billion, UK protection premium up 3% to £1,109 million, and direct investments up 43% to £6.6 billion. Turning to our businesses and starting with LGR, Q3 was a quieter quarter for bulks, with £92 million of completions, meaning £1.5 billion of total annuity sales year to date. Our bulk pipeline remains strong. The expansion of our bulk annuity business internationally is a big strategic opportunity for LGR. We entered the US pension risk transfer market in October with a $450 million bulk deal with Philips and are progressing plans to enter the European market in the next few months. Our new lifetime mortgage business is exceeding our expectations, with applications now running at around £10 million per week from a standing start earlier this year, and we're targeting to write up to £200 million by the end of this year. Going forward, we believe more and more people will access their housing equity to help finance their retirement. LGIM is now ranked the 15th largest global asset manager in a Towers Watson research published this week. External net flows of £21.7 billion excludes the £13 billion National Grid pension scheme mandate win announced in September, which will receive the assets this month. LGIM's international expansion continues at a pace and is being led by LGIM America. LGIM's Asia business is also making progress with mandate wins in Korea, Taiwan, and we've just entered Japan. In the UK, our retail funds business continues to make significant progress, moving up into the top three of UK net retail fund sales in Q3. Workplace pensions also grew strongly, with assets under administration up 30% to £13.1 billion, with further significant mandates yet to fund. These newly won schemes will add a further 700,000 people to our existing 1.4 million customers by the end of next year. LGC's investments are focused on four key areas where we believe limited institutional finance have created attractive investment opportunities. They are housing, urban regeneration, alternative finance, and clean energy. Notable investments so far this year in the urban regeneration space include first phases of a £400 million investment in Cardiff and an initial investment of £162 million in Leeds. In total, direct investments are up 43% on last year at £6.6 billion, and we anticipate adding at least two more urban regeneration deals in the next 6 months. Legal & General Insurance increased its UK protection premium by 3% year-on-year to £1,109 million, maintaining its position as the largest provider in the retail market. Our savings business, which comprises digital and mature savings, increased its assets under administration by 2% year-on-year to £104.9 billion. As you know, we closed our with-profits fund to new business in January and are identifying cost efficiencies to compensate for the gradually declining asset base. Co-funds generated net flows of £2.6 billion, with total assets under administration up 6% at £73.1 billion. LNG America delivered year-to-date sales of $86 million, in line with guidance at the time of our interim results, where we said we expect new business volumes to be circa 25% lower than for 2015 compared to 14. LNG America is important to the expansion of the group in the US, providing back-office support for LGR and the balance sheet for writing further US pension risk transfer business. I'm pleased to say we're ahead of our group-wide target to deliver operating cost savings of £80 million, reducing costs from £1.25 billion in 2014. And finally, Solvency II. As you know, we've applied to the PRA to use our internal model to calculate our solvency capital requirement, transitionals, matching adjustment, and deduction and aggregation for LNG America. Whilst we've not yet received any feedback in respect to the PRA's decisions, we do expect to obtain approval for these applications. We'll report our Solvency II capital position for the first time as part of our full-year results in March 2016. So to quickly sum up, our stock of business and cash are up, our business has momentum, and we have further growth opportunities. So now I'll open the call to questions.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star followed by one on your telephone keypad now. If you change your mind and wish to remove your question, please press star followed by two. When asking your question, please ensure your phone is unmuted locally. Our first question today comes from the line of Oliver Steele from Deutsche Bank. Oliver, please go ahead.
Morning, Mark. Morning, everyone. Three questions to start with. It's sort of difficult to know where to start, actually, with your numbers today. But can you talk a bit more as to why the third quarter cash flow appeared to accelerate? I think there's been a rebasing of your assumptions in some of the insurance businesses, as well as underlying momentum elsewhere. Why have you rebased those assumptions upwards? So what's going on there? So that's question one. Secondly, on the new business strain, given how little bulk annuity business you wrote in the quarter, it seems a surprisingly positive strain figure. And I'm wondering if that's been driven by either cost savings or maybe the equity release sales which you're generating. And then thirdly, if you're now writing bulk annuity business in the States, what does that imply for the U.S. dividend to the holding company?
Okay, I think probably for the first one, I might pick up all those three questions myself, but I'll clearly share the questions out beyond that. So in terms of kind of the Q3 cash flow progression, op cash, up 11% at the three-quarter year point. In terms of what's going on there, I think there's a series of kind of contributing factors there, Oliver. No one thing in isolation. So clearly in terms of the performance of the non-insured businesses, clearly within that result, we've got LGIM's profits in there. So we're bringing LGIM on a post-tax operating profit basis. Now, clearly LGIM, as you can see from the numbers, is trading well, and clearly that's had some benefit. The likes of our general insurance business, Q3 has been a reasonably benign period for claims. So again, in terms of we bring our GI business again in on an operating profit after tax basis. So again, that's had some benefit. And we have gone back and just revisited, as we do every year, just to make sure our calculation of the expected release from our insurance businesses is as accurate as possible. And again, this year we've done that, and it has revealed bits of prudence which were in the which were kind of not in the initial assessment, which we have brought into the calculation at Q3. Again, no one factor per se, Oliver, is driving the increase. It's just some of the parts, and they're all pretty much going in the same direction. Hence, we've got a reasonable uplift overall, but no one thing in isolation. On the new business surplus and your comment that surprisingly positive given the low volumes, you're quite right. Clearly, volumes weren't massive, particularly in the bulk space in Q3. But again, in your question, you kind of hint at the kind of actually the main reasons we have seen benefit in the net cash in the new business surplus is down to two main factors. Firstly, we have to say we have been having a pretty strong rebase of our cost base during the course of 2015. For our in-force book, that will come through as an experience variance at year-end. But for new business, we do take benefit of any unit cost benefits do get factored into the calculation of new business strain or surplus. So to the extent to which those cost savings have impacted and benefited new business, you are getting that benefit through the new business surplus calculation. And if a major point, again, you alluded to it in your question, we do allocate the lifetime mortgage asset volumes to new business in LGR, and therefore tends to which we get enhanced spread by credit covenant strength in that space. That additional spread does come through and boost the new business surplus associated with the year-to-date new QR. So it's not just about what's happening in Q3. We allocate that based on the year-to-date new business volumes in annuities. Again, that's been a positive factor there. In terms of bulk annuities, in the US, it's very early days. As you say, we are writing that through the US business. And I say at this stage, no one deal will make a difference in that regard. But clearly in time, as we grow the US balance sheet, as that business grows profitably, then we would expect that to be a benefit to dividend. Again, I wouldn't expect that to be a short-term benefit, Oliver. That's one, as we grow that general account in the U.S., and that's when we get the benefit in due course. It's not going to be a day one benefit in terms of immediate dividend increases from the U.S. business as a result of U.S. bulk annuity transactions.
Okay, just to come back on that, would it imply any reduction in the dividend short term?
I wouldn't read that into it either.
Okay, thank you.
Our next question on the phone today comes from Andrew Sinclair from Bank of America Merrill Lynch. Andrew, please go ahead.
Thanks. Morning, everyone. Three quick questions, as usual. Firstly, you seem to have been winning a few workplace benefit schemes recently. I just wondered if you've seen any pickup in rebroking of schemes as we approach the switching off commission in April next year. Secondly, just wondered if you could give us an update on pensions de-risking pipeline and how activity is varying between the UK, US and Europe. And thirdly, I realise it's just a trading update today, but just wondered if you could give any comments on the PRA's commentary yesterday, which seemed relatively positive for Solvency II. Thanks.
Okay, cheers, Andy. So I think Zink could pick up the one on workplace and any rebroken activity in the market. Kerrigan picks up the one on pension deep risking. I'll come back on your question on Sam Wood's speech yesterday.
Yeah, just no material change, I think, in activity. It's going to be somewhat sporadic, but I wouldn't say there's any material change. I'll add a couple comments first and de-risking before handing over to Kerrigan, because obviously there's a continuum for implementing LDI strategies before some kind of longevity offloading solution. But we are continuing, again, it depends on, as equity markets rally and or rates back up, it's been very volatile equity markets, but obviously to the extent one or both, we're in a situation where one or both of those environments exist, we will see incrementally an increase in de-risking activity in the LDI pipeline because it impacts funded status of those plans looking to implement de-risking strategies. But again, I'll hand it over to Kerrigan to talk about the ultimate annuity market.
Well, I think that's true on both the UK and the US side, and I'll touch on Europe at the end. You know, we get early sight of what's going on in the pensions de-risking space through the LDI business, different LDI business in the UK and the US, and there's absolutely no let-up in client demand. If anything, an acceleration of a continuous acceleration of clients wanting to de-risk and de-risk all the way through to buy-in or buy-out. So yeah, it's still a very exciting market. The pipeline, our pipeline, the market pipeline is still strong, as you can see from the Q3. Figures difficult to predict exactly when those land, but it's a strong pipeline, and our competitive strength in the UK and the US markets, I think particularly the UK market currently is substantial. Just a touch on the US market, there really is a strong pipeline in that US market. We are quoting on a lot of deals there. And that looks like it's going to be strong into next year also. So the US market is, along with the UK market, particularly exciting. Europe, there's definitely some business to be done in Europe, selectively in the Netherlands in particular. We're very keen to participate in that market. We have the capability, longevity data and the asset management capability and the administration capability to do that, and we're hopeful that we can demonstrate that to you soon.
Okay, thanks, Kerrigan. Just on Sam Wood's speech yesterday, again, I'm sure everyone saw it, but Sam gave a speech to the ABI yesterday where he picked up some further comments on Solvency II. Again, Andy, we did take that as being positive comments. And clearly, there was a lot of stuff he chose to say about the way the risk margins can operate. I think the fact that he's recognised that that we probably have created a non-level playing field here between Europe and the rest of the world is probably a good thing. I think the fact that that's and also the fact I think he recognises that the interest rate sensitivity, the risk margin calculation, has made it more volatile than people were expecting. I think generally probably the risk margin is going to end up being bigger than perhaps the PRA expected when the concept first got constructed. So I think in that sense, the fact that he's looking at kind of what's happened and how it's playing out in practice, I think that's a beneficial thing for ourselves and other people, particularly in the annuity market going forward. I think one thing I would take exception to in Sam's speech, he clearly at one point referenced that he was worried about whether the use of longevity reinsurance would actually reduce rather than enhance policyholder protection. Again, Sam's obviously not mega close to exactly how these swaps work in practice, but I would make the point that these longevity swaps are fully collateralized. They are essentially contracts for difference. We pay a floating leg and we receive a fixed leg and we receive a floating leg in return based on the actual longevity experience. But that difference is fully collateralized. So I would strongly disagree with his comment or his inference that maybe in some way longevity reinsurance weakens the policyholder protection. I would strongly refute that's the case. But again, that issue aside, I think the commentary that Sam came up with yesterday was entirely helpful, and we look forward to taking that debate forward going forward. But again, I'm not expecting any material change before 1 January 2016.
Very good. Thank you very much.
Our next question on the phone today comes from Farhad Gajaganza from Nomura. Farhad, please go ahead.
Hello, good morning. Could I just chase up on the BOA comments in the US bulk pipeline? First of all, given they have a different capital regime versus what we'll have here, do you see any regulatory arbitrage whether people will be looking to undercut you, and how will you respond to that in the US, firstly? And just second, on the BOE comments again, they were talking about non-EU companies participating in the UK market. Now, I think you also mentioned reinsurers as well, and I know some of your panel is US reinsurers, so again, could you just comment on that, how you see that developing? And the final thing is on LGM, it's doing very strongly, and even the index funds have net inflows for 9 months. Could you just again remind us of what we should be expecting for the index flows going forward, given that we're going through the risking journey in the UK? Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Farhad. So I think if you don't mind, pick up those first two of his questions, then obviously didn't pick up the LGM index. Even index flows are up for Kevin. Even. Well done, mate. Go on, Kevin.
So US belt pipeline, different capital regime. Clearly, that's one of the reasons we're applying for level playing field deduction and aggregation in the US. That's clearly an interesting market to play in with a different capital regime. That's all there is to say on that point. Clearly linked to your second question in terms of the UK market, very clear from you've seen the deals that we've done that there's a flow of longevity risk, particularly with the risk margin in mind that Mark was talking about, from Europe to North American reinsurers, and we're recognised that, accepted that, and actively participating in that. It gets a good result for our clients and boosts our return on capital. So that looks like a sensible thing to participate in and get involved with, and just recognise that that's a fact. You mentioned about. More UK companies get involved in the UK market. Yes, some interesting activities there. A real positive that more reinsurers want to get involved in on the longevity side of that market. So I see that as the positive. It's a healthy market. Plenty of client demand. Reasonable competition, but not too much. I see all that as a positive, vibrant market actually.
Yeah, in relation to Elgin's business, that we are seeing, as you point out, increasing positive momentum in virtually all parts of the business, which is encouraging. It's obviously not going to be a straight line in all these markets, but we are the breadth of the strength of the results is really encouraging. With respect to the index business specifically, which you asked about, we do expect to continue to see outflows in the UK DB market because we have mostly passive equity assets, and so it's a continuation of the trend that you've now seen for several years, and that will continue, but we are executing better. We've invested heavily in the business in regards to expanding the distribution of the of index capabilities more broadly, so we're seeing increasing flows in retail. Would expect that to continue. We're much more competitive in that space now. In the defined contribution market, now again, a lot of these assets are coming in as part of multi-asset funds, but the underlying funds are, majority of those funds are in underlying index funds, but packaged as part of multi-asset solutions for the DC market. And then internationally, we've entered the U.S. market, starting to see, well, this is our first year in the U.S. market, and starting to win mandates. We have a few clients now and getting seeding for funds, and so we do expect to see an acceleration of growth there. And in Europe and Asia, there's positive momentum as well. Money has hit the press. Some of the sovereign wealth funds we've had net outflows to some funds as well as other managers. So, again, it's never going to be, positive momentum in all markets at all time. But broadly speaking, we do hope to expect to, again, it's not going to be every quarter, but the trajectory would be positive net flow situation going forward. One other thing just to mention, also our product offering, we've expanded. I mentioned the multi-asset funds and leveraging the index capabilities. as building blocks for a growing array of multi-asset funds for the DC and retail market and increasingly DB, but also product development and alternative beta space. So the types of funds that we're offering is expanding, and we expect to continue to evolve our product offering and the range of index funds into the alternative beta space going forward.
Okay, so as we were for the UK index funds, but better stuff happening elsewhere. Okay, thank you.
Our next question today comes from Greg Peterson from PwC. Greg, please go ahead.
Morning, gentlemen. How are you doing?
Very good, thanks, Greg.
I'll do the traditional three questions. The first two is on the net capital generation. You mentioned in your opening remarks that one of the key factors there was better results at LGIM. The run rate, I mean, when I modeled it, I looked at the run rate at LGIM in the first half of the year. I considered that the cash flows had started improving in the second quarter, that equity markets were down and your costs were controlled. All things equal, that wouldn't have justified the jump in the run rate that you've seen. I mean, what exactly has caused the quarter-on-quarter jump rate in LGIM? That's the first question, in LGIM's contribution to OCG. Second one is on the GI side, did you have any large prior releases in the third quarter? And then on my third question is when you look at your economic capital model and you strip out one-offs, you adjust for the fact that you're actually trying to run a double A calibration, not a triple B calibration. It doesn't look like you, even at the current run rate of annuities, you're basically consuming all the capital that's been released off the back book. I mean, what is the capacity to grow box or take on a few large, more super box in the short term? I was struggling to understand that.
Okay, thanks, Greg. I'll pick up, I'll probably have a go all three, and perhaps let Kerrigan add a bit of colour to the last one. And in terms of my answer earlier to the question from Oliver about kind of where the growth in the cash had come from, I wasn't implying that it all come from one area. I was simply saying that there's been a number of positive, and actually pretty much all the variances all went in the same direction this time around, hence we've ended up with a reasonably meaningful growth in the operational cash growth year on year. So I wasn't implying for a second that all the delta you've calculated in your spreadsheet, Greg, is down to LGIM or GI, or I'm simply saying that so happened this time around that all our variances went in the same direction, hence we ended up with a reasonable outperformance as a result. So we clearly haven't given a divisional breakdown of cash generation. Clearly this is a trading update, and we do obviously try and give a bit of colour around cash at Q1 and Q3, but we don't give a divisional breakdown. So I'll save the kind of final profit number earnings update for our prelims in March, if you don't mind. Likewise on GI, nothing untoward there. I hinted in my answer earlier that we've had a pretty benign Q3. In reality, we'd expect kind of most years Q2 and Q3 to be pretty benign because that's what the weather does in the summer. But it's been a pretty quiet third quarter, and therefore that has benefited GI. But again, nothing untoward going on in terms of funnies, in terms of prior releases, etc. That's not part of that equation. On the capital consumption point of bulk, now clearly we set out very clearly at the interims this year. We are very focused now on a capital light model. For annuities, very, very aware. This is about optimising our return on capital. I wouldn't say it's anything to do with any sort of capital constraint. We're simply, as a capital deployer, we're making sure we get adequate return for the capital we deploy, and that's about just all times making sure we have the optimum capital model to do that. You shouldn't interpret that as meaning we've got some sort of capital constraint in terms of what we can and can't afford to do. It's simply making sure that when we do deploy capital, we get an adequate return for our shareholders for doing so. Kerrigan, do you want to add to that in any way?
Pretty much in terms of super bulk, there are and there will be super bulk deals out there. If the price is right and our return on capital in particular is right, then we're still very interested in those deals. So I wouldn't, as Mark was saying, I wouldn't read anything into Q3 figures beyond just a quiet quarter.
All right. Cool. Thank you.
Cheers, Greg.
Cheers.
Our next question on the phone today comes from John Hocking from Morgan Stanley. John, please go ahead.
Morning, everybody. Just have a couple of questions on bulks. I just wondered what your approach was going to be in terms of capitalizing the US unit and how you think about relative returns on capital, sort of US versus Europe. And then secondly, the comment in the release about sort of further internationalizing bulk. When you talked about Europe, is that Ireland or is that Netherlands? Thank you.
Right, do you want those two, Kerrigan?
Yeah, sure. I mean, interesting pipeline in the US, as we talked about. The question earlier was talked about, referred to a different capital regime, which of course it is. So the capital consumption is different between the EU and Europe. We have, as we've always talked about, a consistent return on capital metric, and we will apply that and pick and choose whether we want to do US deals or UK deals. I think the important thing is that we have that choice and we look across both of those things equally, and you'll be able to tell which looks more attractive for us by the deals we write, I think, effectively.
Have you had to sort of pump prime the US legal entity, or how do you think about actually locating capital in the US?
I'll pick it up. We're not anticipating a material increase in any capitalization of the U.S. business. Without giving too much away, John, LNG America, our insurance business, is very, very long mortality. It's a term insurance writer currently, so certainly in terms of the local statutory basis in the U.S., writing more longevity business in that insurance business is a very good diversifier. So we're not anticipating, certainly for the first leg of growth in the pension risk transfer space in the U.S., to have any material impact on the capital requirement of that U.S. business.
And then just to follow up on your point on international, really we're talking about the Netherlands there, it being the largest market in Europe ex-UK.
So just to follow up on the Mark's U.S. point, what proportion of the mortality is actually reassured in the U.S.? What proportion do you keep on your own balance sheets?
We have different models in the UK. So in the US, we have an excess reinsurance cover basis. So above a certain amount, I'm not going to give that number away, but every life assured above a certain amount, we reinsure at the reinsurance market. So we do retain a reasonable amount of mortality risk on our US balance sheet.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Our next question today comes from Gordon Aitken from RBC. Gordon, please go ahead.
Yeah, morning. A couple of questions on bulks, please. First, just to follow up, I mean, you said the bulk pipeline remains strong, but I would expect you to say that ahead of a Q4, and it's a very seasonal market, this one, with sales mostly in Q4. I'm just wondering, is there an added driver in 2015 due to Solvency II? I mean, the consultants I spoke to a few months ago were certainly pushing trustees to make decisions, then in order to get Solvency I pricing. And secondly, so in the Dutch market, I mean, it's obviously a different market to the UK and the US in that insurance companies have in the past taken on pre- and post-retirement liabilities. They even take on active members, in fact. I'm just wondering what your strategy will be there. Thanks.
Sure. Yeah, on the first point, we're not seeing a huge pickup into Q4. I think rationally you would say trustees probably should have hurried up and got things done before the implementation of Solvency II and the removal of transitional relief. But really, from the trustees' point of view, the potential price increase going into next year doesn't look that substantial in the face of big equity market moves or interest rate moves. So they haven't actually, other than a few odd cases, really got to move on and close this year. So I'm not expecting a big pickup in market volumes in Q4 particularly. I mean, give or take, there'll be a couple of super bulk deals in there possibly. Then on the Dutch model. On the Dutch market, we're really interested in pensioners and deferred, so not really active members, but very similar to our UK and US payout businesses. It's that long stream of relatively well-known cash flows going out that we're interested in, so we can apply our asset management strategy to that. So it's a bit similar pensioner and deferred pensioner market that we're interested in the Netherlands.
Okay, thanks very much.
Our next question today is from Callum Kelly from UBS. Callum, please go ahead.
Morning. I have three questions, please. On UK bulk, if we look here to date, you've written 1.25 billion. But if we take out the additional tranches of the ICI bulk scheme that you wrote in Q1 2014, it looks like it's closer to roughly 250 million of bulks from new pension schemes. New to LNG. So clearly it's volatile, but can you give some color or specifics on why you think it's a lot quieter than you expect in the context of, you know, industry consultants tipping the bulk annuity market in the UK to hit close to 10 billion by full year. Secondly, on US pension risk transfer opportunity, obviously you're positive in the outlook there. Can you give some color on any targets you have in place for that business? And maybe any color on, you know, the return on equity capital shareholders can expect to achieve on that business over time. And thirdly, do you expect to maintain IFRS cash generation as a key metric to communicate cash going forward? Clearly, there's two big changes taking place, Solvency II, and, you know, we've seen peers move to other Solvency II remitted surplus cash type numbers. But we've also, further down the line, the new accounting standard IFRS 4 Phase 2, and there's a particular provision within that to spread profits on any contract over the full duration of a contract, which, you know, seems to constrain the ability to recognize more profit upfront on the annuity business over the long term. So, you know, is IFRS net cash the right metric to judge cash on, or can we expect there to be changes in how that's communicated going forward? Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Colm. I'll ask Kerry Cohen to pick up the first one about any more colour he can give on the UK pipeline and market this year. I'll pick up the one point on the US return on equity targets and indeed your question about cash metrics going forward.
Yeah, just on the UK bulk pipeline volume. I mean, as you'll know well from the figures, a lot of it's dominated by Greg's phrase, super bulks. When you look at our deals last year, ICI, TRW. A lot of the volume is dominated by that. We've had a pretty steady flow of small to medium-sized bulks this year. That's really great business for us. That has been great business for us. I think whether or not it hits the consultant's target of 10 billion for the end of the year will depend on whether a couple of super bulk deals out there will close or not. So just the fact that headline volume, 10 billion, is given to you by the consultants is dominated by a couple of super bulk deals, I think.
Okay, thanks, Kerry. Then, in terms of the U.S. pension risk transfer market and any targets we might have, our only target, Colm, is to make sure we maintain our return on economic capital pricing basis. So, you know, the only thing that matters here is making sure we get the adequate return we expect to get when we deploy capital into that market. So, we have no kind of volume targets per se. Clearly, over time, we expect that market to be material for us, but we don't set short-term targets that Kerry has to go away and write any one quarter, any one year. We are absolutely disciplined to make sure that when we deploy capital, we get the returns we want from that capital deployment. So that's absolutely our target is to achieve that return. In terms of kind of metrics going forward, I do expect us, and we do plan to maintain our existing IFRS cash generation metrics going into the future, not least because, as you say in your question, Colm, we are going to see another change yet again in the future. When finally we're going to get IFRS 4 Phase 2, the new insurance liability standard, whenever it comes in, probably now going to be 2020 before it comes in. I'm very, very keen we don't end up kind of changing metrics kind of three times in the space of 5 years. So it is definitely my plan to maintain our existing cash definitions going forward, and we will then reconcile those back to, say, the new Solvency II balance sheet going forward as well, so you can kind of see how the things interact. But I think in terms of consistency, I'm very keen to maintain the cash metrics we have in the organisation already. And if and when IFRS 4 comes in 4 or 5 years' time, we'll take stock then about exactly what that means in terms of the metrics. But for now, I'm keen to maintain consistency.
Okay, thank you.
Our next question on the phone today comes from Andrew Crean from Autonomous. Andrew, please go ahead.
Good morning, all. Could I come back to the first question, and could you enumerate the third element of cash generation? You talked about one-off releases in the third quarter. Secondly, could you talk about what's going on in the protection market and whether you think you're growing share or whether after many years growing share you seem no longer to be so? And then thirdly, I'd like you to talk, if you could, candidly about the savings business, which I see that you broke out as a separate division. You closed the with-profit business. It's been rumoured in the press that you've been trying to sell K-Funds and Suffolk Life. I mean, what is the overarching strategy towards these businesses going forward?
Okay, thanks, Andrew. I'll pick up the first one around your comment on one-off releases in the Q3 numbers. Obviously, Duncan can pick up any comments on the protection market, and I'll ask Mike Berry just to comment on strategy for K-Funds and Suffolk Life. In terms of in relation to kind of number, I've given as much color as I want to give at this point, Andrew. I would just counsel against the expression one-off releases. This is as we do every year, we just go back and make, as we get more information to go through the year, we just go back and make sure the accurate calculation of our expected release goes through into the cash number. So you shouldn't see this as being a kind of a funny one-off. This is simply yes, it's come through in the Q3 numbers, but it is essentially a year-to-date impact from the recalculation of the expected release. It's just looking at where the prudence comes from and making sure we've got that properly modelled. And as we get to the end of the year, we have a clearer definition of kind of what's actually come through by way of prudence releases during the course of that year. It's no more than that. This is not some odd accounting going on. It's not one-off in nature. It's an exercise we do every year.
No, I just wanted the number, actually. I didn't say it was funny.
Yeah, and I'm not going to give it to you, Andrew. As I said, but at year-end, you'll get the full breakdown, as always, a divisional cash breakdown, and then you'll be able to see where the which divisions have generated what cash generation in the year. But until then, you have to wait till March.
Okay, on the protection side, yeah, in recent years we have grown our share of the protection market, and we continue to look for opportunities to increase our share of the protection market. I think probably in the numbers you're looking at, our share over recent quarters has been fairly stable.
Mike?
And on Suffolk Life and co-funds, our approach there is to improve the profits by focusing on operational efficiencies. So we've gone through, since acquisition of co-funds, looking at integration benefits with the rest of Legal & General. In 2015, we've also focused more on improving the underlying efficiency within the co-funds business itself and continue to identify cost savings that are there.
Could I just come back on that, just with a bit more candor? I mean, what was being reported in the press is that you tried to sell K-Funds, because I think there was said that there would be a bill of about 125 to 150 million to re-platform. Can you talk a little, it looks as though any disposals or sale process has fallen through. Does that mean that we may anticipate a big spend to re-platform?
I'm afraid I can't comment on the speculation that's been in the press.
How about commenting on the spend to replatform?
I think it might say in his answer, we're committed to actually sorting out the kind of day-to-day processing inefficiencies at co-funds, so you shouldn't be expecting a material, shiny, bright new toy replatforming proposition to be spending from L&G. We're focusing on getting the bread and butter processes sorted out.
Thank you.
Our next question on the phone today comes from Anusaya Iyer from Jefferies. Anusaya, please go ahead.
Oh, hi, good morning. I have three questions. The first one was just on the bulk annuity pipeline. And I know you said don't read into Q3, but I just want to understand whether there's any weighting going on here, because obviously we're seeing index flows coming back to positive, but a quieter bulk annuity pipeline. Is the pension fund just waiting for rate increases, and how long is that wait going to last? And my second question is just on the reinsurance market and whether – I just want to understand what stops funds from going direct to reinsurers, and will there at some point be a direct relationship between funds and reinsurers which risks some of the longevity business that you do? And the last one was just on LGIM. I think the investor relations team did say that LGIM is in the top three for UK net retail funds now. And I just want to understand what's driving that. Is it any one fund, and is it sort of a trend that we should pay attention to? Thank you.
Thanks, Sarah. Kevin, first two, and I might pick up on the retail funds in LGIM.
Yeah, sure. On the question, is there any weighting based on market movements or rate increases? Well, I think really when you reflect on the market, there's probably about, I don't know, the order of 10% of schemes that may have been down the LDI mandate and are probably pretty much fully funded, and they're the most likely, not exclusively, but the most likely candidates to head towards the buy-in or buy-out route, and they're fairly obviously unaffected by equity market swings and interest rate swings. So not really a waiting point from that point of view. As the ones who are progressing down that route of de-risking, I'd say almost every pension scheme is somewhere on that route of de-risking, then clearly, to get themselves into the position where they can some contribution from the sponsor afford a buy-in or buy-out, then that is somewhat dependent on equity market moves and moves in the UK in real interest rates, nominal interest rates in the US. So that will have some impact on the following up group. But you know, there's a wide dispersion of clients, different stages of the de-risking process with different funded statuses. So I don't think any of that really affects the day-to-day or quarter-to-quarter or year-to-year interest in clients looking to de-risk. On the reinsurance market, I think that's a really interesting question and something we think a lot about. Could funds go directly to reinsurers? Well, the answer is in the UK, for the UK pension schemes and US schemes, is no, they can't. They have to deal with an insurer. But it certainly is an interesting thing to work out how we can most effectively service our clients by tapping that reinsurance market. So if we can be an insurance company or set up an insurance company in the middle that can transform risk straight into the reinsurance market, then I think that's a very interesting proposition for us and our clients.
In regards to the LGIM retail flows, so the last couple of years we have strengthened our distribution and rationalized our product offering in the retail market. And we rank currently, I'm not sure where it's at, but 12th, 13th, or 14th in AUM in the UK retail market. So the second quarter being fifth in net flows and the third quarter third in net flows, obviously we have aspirations to be significantly higher, you know, in the league tables in the retail space. Most of the demand over the past year, 1 to 2 years, has been in our index funds, our multi-asset funds, and our property funds. We have expectations to grow our presence in fixed income in particular, where we have a very strong brand in the institutional market, and we've been punching below our weight into the retail market over the past several years, and also with a revised set of equity funds, we're in the process now of building a track record. So we do have aspirations, certainly, to, you know, continue to be a more a larger presence in the retail market. We won't be top three again every quarter, but certainly I think the direction of travel and the, you know, should be expected to continue.
All right, great. Thank you.
Our next question on the phone today comes from Abid Hussain from Societe Generale. Abid, please go ahead.
Hi, morning all. Three questions for Cam, please. The first one is on direct investment. I was just wondering if you could articulate in some way the yield pickup that you expect to achieve net off from two asset charges. So that's the first question. The second one is on lifetime mortgages. How do margins on these mortgages compare to, or margins and capital requirements compare to resale annuities? And then the last question is on debt. I think you issued around $600 million of debt during the third quarter. I was just wondering, was that Solvency II driven? Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Avi. So Paul, if you can pick up the one comment on anything you can say on direct investment, you'll pick up. Again, like West Kerrigan on lifetime mortgage, and you can say on help the question, I'll pick up the point on the debt issuance.
Yeah, thank you very much. In terms of direct investments, on the annuity funds themselves, there's a pickup probably between 50 and 100 basis points, depending on the sectors that are being invested in. There is an advantage to some of the investments which we are capturing through combined efforts of investing in a broader range of projects, and we expect that to be a bigger portion of what we're investing in the future. But the main bulk of what is going into the annuity fund is really coming through the LGP direct investment program.
Yeah. I think just adding to Paul's point there, it's you get a yield pickup for illiquidity risk premium, but also with those assets you get generally get better security and better direct control over that security, so any loss given default we expect to be quite significantly lower. That's certainly the types of investments that we look at, so lots and lots of reasons to be interested there. On the lifetime mortgages, margins and capital comparable to retail, they're certainly beneficial assets, but it's a different market. They come through in terms of profitability and benefit to us as assets pretty much in the DI camp. So the actual origination and value you see in Legal & General Home Finance is not reflective of the whole value to us, which is really lifetime mortgages as a diversifier in our asset portfolio and an asset that yields an attractive spread relative to our back book or traded credit. So that's where the real benefit comes through, and that is attractive. I mean, we hopefully as a firm try and strike the right balance between attractive assets and value for money for our clients, and I think we achieve that. But it's a very interesting, attractive market to be in.
Okay, and then the last question, a bit about your question around our debt issuance and whether that was Solvency II related. Categorically, no. So, you know, what we have here is we have active kind of balance sheet management. We have a rolling kind of debt program. So we've got first call dates on some subordinate debt going forward in 2017, 2019, 2021. And all we're trying to do at all times is just manage that the right proportion of debt as part of our capital funding. And we're very comfortable with it operating leverage ratio gearing at around 30%, and that's what we look to try and achieve and maintain over the long term. So we went into the market this year as part of that longer term agenda, but definitely not a Solvency II response.
Thanks. Can I just come back to the first question on the direct investments? How are the negotiations or discussions with the Open PRA going on the asset charges on the infrastructure? I know there's some discussions on reducing the asset charges. I'm just wondering if you could give us an updated comment.
Kerrigan?
I'll start off and I'll
say pork and butter. Yeah.
So I mean, really interesting developments across Europe for this standard formula, with a potential reduction in the spread charge for, hence the SCR for infrastructure assets. That's very interesting. Of course, what's relevant for us is the treatment in the internal model. So we will, of course, be exploring internal model treatments for infrastructure assets in a broadly defined infrastructure class, and that will be interesting. But that's separate from the standard formula conversations, of course.
Yeah, the other thing I would add to that, which is the kind of broader asset base of Legal & General, is the fact that there are a number of indicators that EIOPA have given around assets like strategic equity or SME loans or infrastructure debt, where, as Kerrigan said, the main thing is we are using an internal model, but there are precedents to be set that we can look at within the standard model. And that's really important for us for LGC's assets, which themselves are progressively moving from traded assets into more strategic assets. And we'll look to the type of strategic capital charges that are being used in the standard model when we review our internal model.
Thanks, Paul. Let's carry on.
Thank you.
Our next question on the phone today comes from Alan Devlin from Barclays. Alan, please go ahead.
Hi, guys. Thanks. A couple of questions. Just to follow up on the lifetime mortgages, is the current run rate of volume sustainable and therefore the benefit of the new business stream, our new business surplus, sustainable as well? And then just on Elgium, first of all, on LDI, you kind of alluded to the fact that, you know, if interest rates go up or equity market rally, there's a strong pipeline of LDI that could come on board. Do you know what kind of pipeline you have and how much have got triggers that will automatically come on if certain thresholds are hit? And then just finally, on Elgium, the growth in Asia, particularly, you know, what's the focus and an opportunity with your Japanese partner in that region? Thanks.
Cheers, Alan. Obviously, Kerrigan for the first one and Mark the second too.
Yeah, lifetime mortgages, the run rate sustainable. Well, you've seen from the figures that Q3 year-to-date was just over 100 million based on the Q2 and Q3 figures. We're still guiding towards the order of 200 million for this year. Is that Q4 run rate sustainable? Yes, absolutely. Confident in that.
Yeah, in regards to Elgium, we can't really quantify, I guess, that precisely, the timing of the de-risking activity that our clients will have. We'll have a sense with some of the larger clients, but if you think about how broad and diverse our client base is now, and it's growing in the U.S., obviously, there's a combination of, well, increasingly in the U.S., new clients coming on board. Within the U.K., a higher percentage of the activity would be from existing clients. And then we're increasingly winning mandates with smaller clients and some of our pooled offerings. So it's we can't project with that degree of precision. You really have to look more at the percentage of liabilities that that still haven't, you know, de-risked, that are unhedged, however you want to define it. And that's the potential opportunity still for us to take on new business or transfer business from passive, which is covered in our markets and other movement line item. But the timing of that, it's difficult to project. In regards to Japan, our recently announced agreement with Mejisudo will focus on providing global fixed income products for pension clients in the Japanese market. Actively managed global fixed income.
Cool. Thanks for the answers.
Okay. Thanks, Alan.
Our next question today comes from Barry Corns from Panmure Gordon. Barry, please go ahead.
Good morning, all. Just three questions from me. I wonder if you could talk generally about the outlook for UK pension savings reform, and also then go on maybe to talk about current in-retirement market, focusing on the cash annuities drawdown split. And thirdly, just wanted to pick up on costs. You obviously talk about being ahead of target. I just wonder if that's in terms of the amount or the timescale, and whether or not you could look to revise and increase your cost savings, perhaps in the likes of areas like co-funds. Thank you.
Okay, I'll pick up the first one and the third one, and maybe if Kevin can pick up on just the shape of the post-retirement, I'll go to them, or maybe Jacqueline might can comment as well. But it's just on the UK pension savings reform, I think it's now, because George has now said, category is going to update in the spring budget rather than the autumn statement. I think that's sensible, because there's been a lot of people fed back in to that. Now, we're on record as saying our preferred option is to have a flat rate for tax relief, but at source. So we're advocating basic rate tax relief for everyone at 20%, but at source. So we still want to maintain the exempt tax regime rather than TEE. Clearly, the Treasury will take all that feedback and we'll no doubt consider what happened. I think at the end of the day, we're pretty ambivalent overall. We think LNG will succeed no matter which way around it goes. We just think for the sake of the market, in terms of growth in that market, we think customers will be more reassured to get the tax relief at source rather than relying on promise of a tax relief at the same 50 years' time when they come to retire. So if it ends up being a pension ISA rather than the current regime, that, you know, given LNG strength, particularly with Elgin in the camp, we're very sure we can succeed in that as well. But we would prefer to see the existing regime maintained, where customers have absolute confidence that they get the tax relief at point of source rather than having to rely on a benign chancellor in 50 years' time to give them that, to honour the promise. So that's where we're coming from in that regard.
Thank you.
On the post-retirement savings market, I'm not sure who wants to go first, but
happy to kick off if you like. I mean, Barry, you know the figures very well indeed, don't you? But I think by numbers of people, it's something like 70% post freedom of choice on the 7th of April have taken cash by pounds. It's more like a third cash, a third annuities, third drawdown. I think on the annuities front, we talk about the market remaining subdued. Really don't see a particular pickup from that level of annuities. They're now larger size. There's a regular flow that we're seeing of standard fixed term and enhanced annuities, and those proportions will vary over time, I think. But looks like a fairly stabilised flow for annuities now, but much less exciting than it would have been a couple of years back. On the drawdown options, well, I think we're very excited about the long term potential. I think the market's got a long way to go there yet, but I'm very excited about the LGM multi-asset funds, post-retirement funds, and their 2 and 3 retirement funds that they're launching, and I think there's a big part for those to play in a future income drawdown proposition as that market develops.
Jackie, do you want to quickly comment on close activity immediately post the pension reform date and kind of where things have settled down? Just a quick comment on just activity levels more generally.
Yeah, I mean, we've continued to see increased claims volumes through quarter two, and our new norm in terms of BAU is about 500 to 700% up. Customers are continue to take full lump sums and small amounts effectively.
Okay, thanks, Jackie. So on the kind of wider aspiration for cost, I mean, clearly we're pleased that our run rate currently is to deliver more than 80 million for the current year. Barry, I think in reality, it's always been part of LNG's DNA to kind of make sure we remain as efficient as possible. I think we flagged very clear today that in Mike's world around Suffolk Life and co-funds, we're going to be very focused on that on going forward. But yeah, it's part of our wider DNA cost management will always be a key part of our agenda. So it's not just a once and done thing this year. Now, we will always kind of just make sure we have the right cost base for the organisation to make sure that supports the earnings growth we want to deliver from here on in. So I'm not going to give any revised cost, just simply to say that it will always remain part of our strategic agenda going forwards.
Okay, thank you.
I think we've given time is now 10 o'clock. We're probably going to call it there, if you don't mind. So thanks, everyone, for your inputs and lots of questions. We appreciate that, and we speak to you at the year end.